You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Reach us on the telephone at 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on our website at www.thepes.com. The Avery Micro Computer Lab and Avery Hall shows free movies every Friday at 5 p.m. Movies include Outfox, Talladega Nights, Brother, The Goonies, Rocky Horror Picture Show, Children of Men, and many more. For a full listing or more information, contact the AML at their website, www.aml.wsu.edu. KZUU is pleased to announce the formation of the Barbershop Harmony Society chapter in the Pullman, Moscow area. They are seeking men of all ages who enjoy singing. They are meeting every Monday at 7 p.m. in the Gritman Day Health Building on East Palouse River Drive in Moscow. For more information, contact Ross Bricklimer at 406-570-8576. Now, this PSA card, though, unfortunately, that 4 could be a 9, so it could be 906 for the area code or 406. Try it both ways. So 406 or 906, 570-8576. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in on the good times at Neal Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn about Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4 to 5 p.m. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocabulary from 5 to 5:45. An advanced class with one-on-one teaching meets 5:45 to 6:30 p.m. Contact Kimi Hirose at 509-432-3903 or the Neal Public Library at 334-3595 for more information. KZUU DJs, Republic Service announcements like what you heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, room 126B, or fill out a form online located at the staff button and email it to PSA@KZUU.org. For more information, call our office at 335-2208. On the show today, we have Daniel Shawns from the WSU College Republicans talk about their most recent escapades on the Cub Mall. We also have information about some intramural sports just took place this last Sunday. And I'm going to be talking about a couple other editorials we saw in the Evergreen today in the paper. Plus, we're going to have Batman, the Caped Crusader, the man who protects Pullman from the evil clutches of the evil people. Stay tuned. And we are back. Well, on the telephone with me, we have Daniel Shawns from the WSU College Republicans. Daniel, how are you doing? Uh-oh. I think this is exactly what I was going to be talking about, wasn't it? Daniel, do you got me? No, Daniel. Oh, man. It happens every time, I'll tell you what. For some reason, one day this thing works like a champ and I can put him on the phone and life is working. And another day, he's just gone. He's just not there. Sort of sucks. But anyway, we'll try to figure this one out. In the meantime, yeah, I just hung up on him in case he was there. I don't know. Oh, you know what? There it is. Ah, sweet. I bet if he calls back, I'll get him on the air this time. That's the problem right there. I don't know if you've ever played with this keyboard thingy in here, but there's like about 1,000,000,000 buttons, and it's so bright in here, these buttons, the lights get washed away. And I think that's what it was. There's a PGM button up there. And that, for whatever reason, that wasn't pressed. But it is now. So if Daniel Shawns calls me back, we'll get him on the air, and we'll start talking about the kind of fun stuff they had. In the meantime, let me go on a little rant. I talked about it a while back. I call it drive-by cell phoning, and that's where you drive by, you see something, you call it in, versus trying to find out if there's actually a problem. Guess what? It looks like Daniel's trying to call again. Let's go ahead and try to get Daniel on the air. So now that I've hit the right buttons, we'll go ahead and see if this works. Daniel, you're on the air. How you doing, man?
Scotty.
Hey, there we go. See? It worked. You just got to press the right button sometime. How you doing, Daniel? Daniel? Ah, geez. Come on. Daniel? Okay. Obviously, I can hear him. He can't hear me. And that is also the other problem. Daniel? Okay. Well, I thought I had it figured out. I guess I am no engineer when it comes to being a radio guy. All I do is press buttons. So, unfortunately, we're going to probably have a hard time getting Daniel on the air today, and I don't know what I'm going to be able to do about that. So, I apologize to everybody for not getting Daniel on the air, because I know this would have been a fun call. Maybe what I'll have to do is get him into the studio instead of putting him on the telephone. But he said that he's feeling really ill today, so we might not be able to get him at all. So anyway, drive-by cell phoning. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you see something that looks like a car accident, why don't you stop and say, hey, are you guys hurt? Rather than just driving by and not helping them. Oh, but you feel better about yourself because you call it in. So, yeah, here's another situation. Drive-by cell phoning. Ambulances and rescue units getting dispatched from two different cities because somebody drove by what they thought was a car accident. But then somebody from a local power company stopped and found out, oh, no, this wasn't a car accident. Nobody's hurt. It's a broken-down car waiting for a tow. Yes, that's right. We had ambulances and rescue units from two different cities dispatched to a broken-down car, which they would not have been dispatched to had the person stopped for like 3 seconds and said, hey, are you okay? Do you need me to call for help? So once again, a person with a cell phone and the unwillingness to actually stop for a second has taken ambulances and rescue units out of service because of a broken down car. Anyway, just keeping you up to date on the kinds of drive-by cell phoning problems that sometimes exist. So what we were going to talk about with Daniel was there was a demonstration on the mall last week about English being the primary language or the official language in America. And in the Evergreen today, there was a lot of letters to the editor that were not in favor of such a thing, and most of them called, some of them more or less were not all that derogatory to the College Republicans, but there was actually one on the Facebook that was posted that pretty much called the College Republicans homophobic and racist and all that kind of fun stuff. And I don't know how you can get homophobic out of saying English should be the primary language, but that was the allegation leveled at the College Republicans for saying what they believed. And more or less their bottom line is that when it comes to the government and official documentation and whatnot, we should have one language, and we shouldn't have the situation where the government is forced to translate all these documents into multiple languages. And a friend of mine who is against this idea said that we shouldn't be forcing any one language on anybody, and that there shouldn't be an official language. And I asked him, well, do you support the government making documents in other languages and that kind of stuff? So then what languages do you think they should do, and what languages are you going to exclude? So it would almost be impossible to get every single language the world knows and, you know, maybe print it on paper currency because, you know, you don't want to leave anybody out, or make all our documents printed in all these different languages. So even at some point, you're going to have to choose what languages you're not going to translate into. But your argument is that there should be no official language. So theoretically, anybody speaking any language, by your argument, should be able to get any kind of documentation in America in their language. And if you would say at one point, no, we got to stop at one level, it's like, then you yourself are advocating not opening our American language borders to everybody. You yourself are advocating us not to have this wide openness. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you got the slippery slope. Where do you stop? Do you stop where you only have 1 million people or less speaking a language, 1,000 people or less speaking the language, that it's not a native language of America? I mean, at what point do you decide, okay, we're not going to support such a language? And the argument is that by having one language and not multiple languages, you have a government that is able to do everything in a set standard. And the whole reason why we have standards is because when you go from one agency in one organization to another to another to another, you have a common baseline of whatever the standard is in order that all the other agencies can pick it up and understand it. And in some cases, you have, say, a computer. A computer has certain standards when it comes to, say, writing programs. And as long as you write the program to these standards, computers of different kinds are going to be able to understand it. But if you write it to a very specific and arbitrary non-standard, it might only work on the one computer you wrote it on and not multiple computers. And the same kind of thing could be said about many other standards, which would also include, say, English as the language. What if one group decided, okay, since there's no language that is official, I'm going to just start writing my bills in Dutch, and we're going to pass it on and do everything in Dutch in the United States Congress. Really, there'd be nothing stopping them. Nobody would be able to understand it, though. But it's just one of those things. It's at what point are we going to realize that having a standard, which really we have a quasi-standard now. English is the quasi-standard. I mean, everything in the United States government, when the bills are written and everything, it's all in Spanish. It's just that at the user level, at the level when the government interacts with the citizens, that we have the issues of the inability to understand one to another. So at what point does the government say, okay, we're going to not spend the time, the resources, the money on having multiple languages? And once again, what languages do you not support? Do you not support, I mean, do you choose, okay, German, Dutch, Spanish, Canadian? That's not really a foreign language, but sometimes it could be. Anyway, I mean, so the point is that having a official language could help with streamlining some of the things that the government is having to do to spread out and create these extra documents and the extra time and have it all under one language where we all have one standard. So I don't believe that to be a racist thing. I know some people believe it's racist to say that, but the question would have to come in is, why would you believe that that's racist? What are you inferring to make that a racist comment? Unless you're saying Americans are racist against the Dutch, the Germans, the French, and so on. But it seems like most people are inferring that if you have English as the primary and the official language, that the only people we are injuring are people who speak Spanish, which is interesting because we're not saying that all languages other than Spanish will be primary or official languages of America. We're saying English will be the official language of America. So to try to infer that it's a racist attitude, I think is showing something about the person who's throwing such charges against the people out there who believe that English should be the primary or the official language of America. So that was interesting. There's on YouTube, there's actually some videos of some of the interactions that they've had with people up there. From what I understand, some of the communications back and forth were reasonable, and some of them were very unreasonable between what people believed and how they expressed their opinions and whatnot. And once again, like I said, there's people claiming that the College Republicans are now racist because they believe that English should be the official language. And I'm just really curious. I'd love to find out how the people leveling those charges are inferring this information down. And doesn't that show that person who's inferring certain things and leveling certain charges is the one who has more issues with race than anybody else? So, unfortunately, because our phone system was not cooperating, even though I thought I had it figured out. Oh, look at that. Let me hit that button there. He'd probably try to call back 4 or 5 times and it was busy or something. Anyway, I don't know what to do to fix it, unfortunately. Sorry, Daniel. Maybe next week we can get you to come into the studio and we could talk about it when you're feeling a little better anyhow. So
Oh.
Well, he's going to try one more time. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and I want to play one more Reverend song anyway, because I got a favorite here. And what we're going to do is we're going to see if we can't figure this out and get him on the air, because I really do want to talk to him. He's a good guy, and we got to hear what he has to say. In the meantime, we're going to hear the favorite of the PBS, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. Wasn't that awesome? The favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. And on the telephone, you'll never guess what, we have Daniel again. Daniel, are you able to hear us this time? Come on, you know you can hear us, Daniel. He needs to listen to his iTunes because he's not talking back, Daniel. Okay, so for whatever reason, he's not listening to his iTunes, which he said he'd be listening to, and he's on the telephone, but he's not coming through. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Are you listening now, finally?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Oh,
I'm
dude.
I'm talking to you.
Oh, I can hear his radio in the background. There's like...
No, I am.
There's... I know you're listening. There's like a 7-second delay. That's awesome. I didn't think we ever had a delay. I wonder if there's a delay because of some
other
reason.
There's a huge lag. There's a 20-second lag.
I know. Do you got a radio? This is going to take like 15 seconds to get these questions asked. This is incredible, man. This is just incredible. So maybe we can get you, like, I think if you listen to it over the air, it's immediate. Because I'm actually listening to myself on the radio right now. So find yourself a radio. Find like a...
There's about a 30-second lag.
Dude, fine. Okay. This is awesome. I'm talking to him in the past. Okay. So find yourself a radio, whether it's in your car. Wow, sorry, you don't have a car. Or whether it's in a, whether it's in your house or whatever. Find a radio, because that will give you an instantaneous feed to the show. Daniel's loving this. This is awesome. I've never had a conversation where I can hear the guy laughing about something I said 10 seconds ago. This is incredible. This is almost fun for a little while. I'm sure after a while it'd be annoying as all craziness, but that's right. So I'm going to ask you a question now, Daniel. In about 15 or 20 seconds, you can answer me. Do you have a radio that you can find?
Okay, I gotta be honest. There's over a minute lag.
Okay, your iTunes sucks. See, that's the thing about Apple. We talked about this last night. You and your Apple. See, I can hear myself a little bit in the background. See, I mean, real people have real computers that like are Dells and stuff like that, and then some people have Apples. See, there we go. That's not a 30-second delay. I just talked about
that. I don't know what to say. I don't know. There's about, you know, there's an 80-second lag.
Oh, my God. We went from a 20-second lag to an 80-second lag. It's hilarious. He's saying that, but it's not that long. He's just smoking crack. No, that's not a 30-second. Okay. So, Daniel, seriously, find a radio that's not an Apple iPod and put it on. 290.7 FM KZUU, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. And we can talk about this College Republican stuff. I mean, it is sort of fun listening to you laugh continuously.
No, there's a radio in front of me. I have a radio right in front of me.
You do? That's incredible. Is it actually tuned in? I'm not talking about an iTunes, because there's no way the lag is this bad. I'm hearing it over my own radio right here in the studio that's actually going out over the air, and it's coming through immediately. Unless maybe the radio waves for KZUU are really slow, and we get them here in the studio like in a second, but as they flow out over Pullman, they slow down, and the further away from the studio you are, the slower they are. Maybe that's what's going on. I doubt it. Daniel, this is awesome, man. I can't believe that you can't hear me over the telephone. But I can hear you just fine. Have a good one. See you later. And I'm not talking to you, Daniel. I'm talking to somebody else. So, okay, this is really crazy. We can't hear.
Well, is there any way we could, like, try this whole phone thing again? Should I call back and then we just try to facilitate it or what?
Well, sure. I'll tell you sure now to that question about whether you should try to call back. We've facilitated or something like that. I don't know what's up with your radio, though, seriously, because I seriously have a radio sitting here tuned in to 90.7 FM KZUU, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. And it's coming in loud and proud, and everything's good. But for whatever reason, your Apple is retarded. And you know how I feel about those apples. So, okay. I do want to talk to you. I think this is an important issue, and I think we need to get your perspective as a college Republican and why you guys held such a event on campus, knowing that it could have possibly been make you guys called racist people, which, like I said, I don't believe you are racist people, but some people seem to think you are. In the meantime, we are going to listen to some beautiful, some favorite of the PES one more time. No, I lied. I'm going to go somewhere else. I am going to go to the... I have a pocket PC, not an iPod. And as you can see, my pocket PC works like a champ compared to those iPods, which are not good. Okay, so I lied. No, I honestly, I don't have an iPod, but it would be sort of nice. We should grab one of those and play some music on it and not try to use it to listen to the radio, because obviously that doesn't work very well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to listen to a little bit of Odd Voss. It's called Ride on a Sunny Day. One of my favorites on the PES. And that was the second favorite of the PES, Odd Voss, with Ride on a Sunny Day. And on the telephone with us, again, we have Daniel. And I can hear in the background that song just barely ended on his iPod. So are you with us this time in real life, or are you?
Yeah, I'm real time. I can hear you now. Am I on the radio?
Yeah. Let me try one thing with you real quick. Okay, I'm going to say a word, and I need you to repeat the word. The word is funny. Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah.
What did I say?
The word is...
And then it stopped?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, try it again.
What I said was the word is funny, but then there's this other button. I mean, I tell you, there's like a 300,000 buttons and slides on this thing. It's huge. It takes up like four rooms in Smith Gym just for the slider alone. And you got to figure out which buttons to press. And I found this other button on my on one of my sliders, and it says TEL. So I got to get a PGM button pressed on one slider and it looks like the TEL button on my other slider, because by hitting that button, you're now listening to me. And when I turned that button off, you stopped hearing what I said. So there we go. We've got it figured out. You're now on the air. Welcome to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM.
Thank
How
you.
Are you doing today?
I'm not doing well. I feel really sick. I'm really nauseous. So
is that because you're a racist?
No, of course not. Gosh.
Okay, well, what I have you on the show for today is I want you to talk a little bit about your experience up there on the Cub Mall, and why was it, first off, that you guys decided to bring out the fact that English should be the official language of America.
Okay. First, I'd just like to apologize for my demeanor. I really don't feel well, and if you hear me yawn, it's not because I'm bored or anything. It's just because I'm very tired and just not feeling well, pretty lackadaisical. So, what we did on the mall was, you know, it was just one language, one flag, one nation. And, you know, really, it wasn't about race or anything. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if everybody learned English, you know, everything would go a lot smoother, such as, you know, in government. And, you know, it's just like, I don't even know where to begin, because when we brought the issue on campus and we were there at the demonstration, nobody, you know, could debate the issue. They would just immediately turn to racism. And then when they got tired of talking about that and calling us racist, they'd go to Christianity. And the funny thing is, many of the members of the College Republicans happen to be Catholic, myself included. And we see some of these people at church. So, you know, it's just ridiculous that they would say something like that.
So they're questioning your Christianity, yet they see you at church.
Yeah, and, you know, for those that aren't from...
What does Christianity have to do with believing that English should be the primary language in America?
You know, I don't even know how to answer that because it has nothing to do with it.
Okay. I that's sort of where I was coming from, but I just wanted to make sure that you were on the same page with me because I'm like, what does that have to do with believing that English should be the official language of America? That a Christian wouldn't believe that? I mean, is that where they're going? Because obviously,
you know,
the race card wasn't working.
I guess what they're saying is, how can we support this if we were Christians? So I guess they're saying that by having the national language as, you know, English, we're assassinating their culture. But we're not saying you can't speak another language. We're just saying that you should learn English to function in society. I mean, where would you draw the line if we had, you know, two national languages? What would those languages be?
Exactly.
Would English be one of them? And then you have to look at it from a safety standpoint. It's like, you know, I'm in B-Law 210 right now, and, you know, I'm starting to learn about unlimited liability. And you have to draw the line somewhere, or, you know, you're going to be responsible for every detail. So, I mean, how many languages would we have, and, you know, would our currency be in another language? Would we have, you know, the American dollar in, say, Japanese or something? I mean, where would you draw the line?
Good question.
And what does it have to do with race, anyways?
Well, once again, I think that's where I said it would be interesting to hear the point of view of the people who are throwing out the race card at you guys, because it's like, it seems like they're the ones bringing race into the issue. So who really has the race issues in their head? Is it the Republicans or is it the Democrats that have the race issues? The ones that seem to be that everything boils down to race. To Republicans, it's not about race. To Republicans, it's about who might be the best for the job, who might be the most qualified for a certain aspect, who might what language should we speak in order to conduct government business. To us, it's a matter of facts. To Democrats, it seems to be about race. If somebody doesn't get a job, it's probably because of their race. It's not because there's one person who might be more qualified than another. And in order to fix those problems, you have to artificially go out of your way and specifically look for specific peoples of specific races in order to fill certain posts, in order for you to feel like you have done the right thing. And, you know, so and that sort of it seems like that seems to be their point of view on a lot of things. So you have a situation where here you're saying you want an official language. But you don't have the Germans running up to you screaming racism. You don't have the Dutch running up to you screaming racism. Because if you do, English is the official language. That could mean that when they go to do a driver's test, that the only way they could get their test would be in English.
And that makes sense because, you know, the rules of the road, stop signs are in English. You know, it says stop. And you have to look at it from a safety standpoint, too. When a cop pulls you over for whatever reason, if and when that happens, and he gives you directions, you know, please put your hands on the steering wheel, you know, reach over with one hand and get your driver's license and registration. If somebody can't understand that, then, you know, they're putting themselves at risk because, well, you know, I mean, it's a tense situation when you get pulled over and the cop, you know, that's when most of the fatalities happen.
It's a tense situation for some people if they have something to hide, right? But for me, if I get pulled over, which I never do because I'm such a good driver and I never speed, for me, it's never a tense situation. It's a pleasant time to contact one of our public servants and tell them what a fine job they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where your point of view is coming from. Are you a hater?
No.
I was just giving you a hard time.
I know.
But did you see the Daily Evergreen today, the letters to the editor speaking about your guys' demonstration? And it was interesting because in one of them, somebody had written that college students should be more open-minded about learning more than one language.
Yeah, and, I actually want to touch base on that. It's only for liberals or, you know, anybody that disagrees with conservatives, they you know, preach the open-minded aspect of debate. But, you know, it immediately becomes closed-minded when somebody disagrees with your viewpoint. So
yeah, they're open-minded to any view that agrees with their view, but as soon as it disagrees with it, then all of a sudden they become closed-minded. But my question to them would be, okay, so how come it is that you're twisting the College Republicans' message? There was nothing that I saw in your pamphlet or on your recordings that said anything about saying there could be no language spoken in America other than English. It's about making it an official language, which would mean that the government uses that language as its primary source of getting information from one place to another. And that's how the language that we would interact with our government. It says nothing about being able to take secondary or tertiary languages in school and learning other languages. And my question would be, shouldn't people in college be smart enough to know the difference, or are they so open-minded that their brains have fallen out?
Yeah, it's just like, I'm just like, I'm shocked about the response we got from our demonstration, because immediately they called us racist. And, you know, these are the same people that, can I say the racial epithet that they called us, or?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay. Well, you know, I'll just go with the second word. One of the people at the demonstration who was also present at the fence demonstration, he was also present at, you know, our one official language, one flag, one nation demonstration. He called us, you know, a blank back. And, you know, what is water? You know, it's a synonym for water, kind of.
He called you guys that?
Oh, yeah, he called us that. He called one of our members that.
Why did he choose to call one of your members that?
You know, that's, who knows, and they're calling us racist.
So, I mean, he essentially used a racist comment and directed it at you guys, but that's okay? You guys are racist, and I'm going to prove you're racist by using racist language against you.
Right, and, you know, I have him on camera. If anybody wants to go to YouTube.com and just type in WSU College Republican, you'll see videos that our club has posted, and you'll see that, you know, they're spewing racial epithets toward them.
That's really interesting.
And, you know, the same people that were at the fence demonstration, you know, were calling us racist comments. They're just racist names and stuff. It was like,
so rather than debating issues with you guys and talking about the merits or the non-merits of what you were trying to get across, their way of debating, quote-unquote, with you was to call you guys names.
Right.
And were these students? Were these professors? Were these just average Joe citizens off the street? I mean, do you know what kind of people were doing this? Because I would really have to question if it was students or professors, what kind of education that they're displaying if their way of argument is to call you guys racist names.
Well, you know, it's really rooted in the CS department. You know, professors and students were using such language towards us. And, you know, where does that come from? They call us racist, yet they use racial epithets. I mean, what is that? And why, you know, the fence issue, you know, there's a due process. You know, there's a legal way to do it, then there's an illegal way to do it. And it's just black and white. There's no gray area in that. And, you know, really there's no gray area in the national language, you know. English should be our national language because it allows us to facilitate our government in a smooth fashion. I mean, how would anybody expect to go to college if they didn't know English? You know, and something that's really interesting, every pilot in America, I mean, every pilot in the world, actually, excuse me, they have to speak English to communicate with every tower in the world for safety purposes. And,
really?
You know, they have to. It's required. So every pilot in the world has to be able to speak English to land a plane or take off.
Interesting. Now, these would probably be commercial pilots.
I would assume so, yeah.
Okay, interesting. So,
because they have to communicate with the tower.
So what you're saying is there is a standard, just like I was talking about, having the idea of a standard where you're able to use something and everybody within that realm is able to understand it and communicate and be able to pass information back and forth. You're saying there's a standard for pilots and ground control that it's English.
Yeah, and is that racist? I mean, what, nobody brought that up.
Well,
I mean, are pilots racist?
Well, here's what would happen, though, is if, I don't know if it's in writing and it says the official and the must has to be, or if it's just like that's the way it's been and that's the way they do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if, maybe if you're to try to say all pilots have to speak English, then all of a sudden they would call you racist. Or maybe they wouldn't. I don't know.
And, I mean, really, you know, this kind of goes back to unlimited liability. Say a tower, you know, countries from all over the world fly to the United States, for example. You know, they all come from, you know, different countries that have different languages. So the, you know, tower controllers would have to learn every single language that would potentially come into the country. I mean, how, where do you draw the line?
Good,
you know,
question. And I think that's the root of this question. What, where do you draw the line? And where I like to look is in this case, look at Canada and the fact that they actually have two languages. They have French and English.
Mm-hmm.
And look at their currency. They have both languages written on currency, on their documents, on street signs. And I remember a couple years ago, there was even a vote about trying to secede from the union with Quebec up there because there are so many issues with the languages and the language barriers. And it was almost that they want us to secede based on a language border and become their own country. And it's like, I'm sure language wasn't the root or the only cause, but I bet you could trace it back and find that language had a lot to do with it, and that caused a lot of other rifts.
Mm.
So it's just one of those things. It's having certain bases that we deal with on a daily basis is not a bad idea. And to call it a racist concept, I think, is ignoring the actual arguments in at hand. Because all you have to do is say, well, if that's racist, therefore, you know, it's shot down. I mean, there's no arguing it if it's a racist concept. And that's what they try to do. And it's sort of frustrating that people who are supposedly open-minded and educated are that's their best way of arguing against you. That's their best way of communicating with somebody about ideas they don't like, rather than being able to form opinions and discuss these opinions without using ad hominem attacks and other fallacies, without the ability to say what they believe and then listen to what you believe, understand it, and then come up with be able to refute reasons why. You know, and that's the bottom line. If people would go up there and say, hey, you know what? I don't believe that you guys are correct, and here's why. We should have multiple languages because it is X, Y, and Z good. And make these good arguments. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem like anybody makes those arguments. They go, you guys are a bunch of racists. You just hate people who aren't white and who aren't straight because you're a bunch of racists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, what does that have to do with my point about English being the official language of America? Well, that's because you're racist. It's like, you know, it's like, where's your reasoning? Where's your thought process that shows that you have anything other than contempt for everybody? You're, you know, it's like the one thing about a lot of people who seem to be more on the left-hand side of the scale is they tend to be bitter. They're bitter about a lot of stuff, and it's like they don't see the bright side. They tend to be pessimistic and bitter about everything. And when a person who's conservative, who actually tends to be more positive and optimistic, when they see good happen and try to point it out, and when they see the positive things, and even in failure, there is positive, but it seems like the only thing that people who tend to be more liberal can point to are the negative things. They can't see the positive. They can only see the horrible things about the country. They can't see the great things about the country.
Mm-hmm.
They can't say, you know, we do have problems and we can work on them, but we have all these great attributes. As far as they're concerned, we're just a horrible racist country that came here hundreds of years ago and conquered the Indians, and we're still holding them down today in every other race unless you're a white male. I mean, it's like it's the same thing over and over and over again, and it's like that seems to be their education. I mean, the school is taking thousands of dollars and seats away from people who would actually maybe want to learn real subjects like math and engineering, and they're indoctrinating them with this kind of hatred towards everything that America stands for.
It's just like, you know, a famous quote from Theodore Roosevelt, you know, I'm sure you've heard of it. He says, we have room for but one language here, and that is the English language. And we have room for but one sole loyalty, and that loyalty is to the American people. I mean, that's pretty powerful. Was he racist? I mean, come on.
I'm sure some people would argue he was, he would say such a thing.
And if you want to take a study abroad program, for example, and I was going to go to Florence, Italy, but I can't do that anymore for, you know, personal reasons and health reasons. But you're required to take Italian. You have to take Italian.
Wait a minute. Why? Don't they have documents and everything in English, and they'll bend over backwards to support you and your unwillingness to learn the language and culture that you're going to?
No.
What? Are you sure?
Well, I mean, to go into the program, you have to take Italian 101. You have to. And that goes with, you know, all the study abroad programs I looked into, you had to take a 101 class of the language of the country.
Well, I would have, like, did study abroad in Canada or something, because it's not going to be too bad to learn their language.
Yeah. So, I just, you know, it's like when people label somebody as a racist, I mean, they should realize the connotations that go along with that label. I mean,
well, you can
assassinate somebody's future by labeling them a racist.
Right, and actually that's the whole point. And I think that, you know, you'll see the reason why people don't publicly support such things is because they're afraid of being called racist or something like that. And they're afraid of that, and they try to shy away from that. They don't want to be called racist and try to deal with the repercussions of it. And that's why it's such a powerful thing to just throw that around. And I think that's why you see that happen at these kinds of demonstrations. Anything that the College Republicans seem to be involved in, they're immediately called racist, and they're down, you know, the people downplay what they have to say, and they're immediately called racist. And the hope is that then the College Republicans will be quiet about certain issues, and rather than discussing these issues, they will, you know, go back in a little dark cave and not poke their head out because, you know, they don't want to be called racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of interesting. I thought it was, you know, aren't balloons? I'm just curious. I mean, it's like they're not really biodegradable, are they?
Well, it takes a long time, but
yeah. I mean, because you have all these problems with like people using the plastic shopping bags, and you know, you got all these issues with all these non-realistically biodegradable items being used. And what was funny is that the College Democrats had that huge display a couple years ago where they had all those balloons and they put them on the library.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I was like, wow, how come nobody spoke out about the fact that they used all those balloons and helped to pollute the landfills and you know, supported the use of such a non-biodegradable product? I thought that was bad.
Yeah, it's just like
they weren't leading there by example. They should have said, no, we're going to have to use something else that's biodegradable and is not a balloon to get our message across. Maybe we could have used recycled paper and cut it out in the shape of a balloon and colored it yellow and put it up there in order to show what we were really trying to get across, but without using balloons, which, you know, by us purchasing them is helping companies profit when they destroy our environment and cause global warming. And the Democrats were helping with that process.
It's just, you know, I don't even know. It's like, it's just like, why? It's like, why? And it's just funny, like, just to touch base.
You sounded like Nancy Kerrigan.
What?
I said you sounded like Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, gosh. Hey, thanks,
Why?
Scotty.
Why?
Thanks, Scotty. It's just like, here's how the order of debate goes. And this has happened twice in the demonstration. Well, our demonstrations. First, you know, they immediately throw banter around the term racist.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to Christianity. And then they talk about the Iraq War. And then, you know, they're talking about abortion. How we just tell people what to do and this and that. What do those issues have to do with, you know, sovereignty, border security? What does it have to do with one flag, one nation, one language? What do those things have to do with that? And they're like, you know, how can you support this if, you know, you don't participate in it? For example, you know, you guys are like all for the Iraqi war and supporting that, but yet you don't serve. Well, you know, can you support a fireman if you're not, you know, a part of that? Or how about police officers?
Yeah, if you're not willing to run into a burning building, should you support other people who do?
Yeah, do you have to support doctors and, you know, the medical system that we have, like, it's the best in the world? Do you have to perform open heart surgery to be a supporter of that? And, you know, just for everybody out there, we have a lot of members that, you know, have joined the military, and I myself have tried to go to Iraq. I talked to a Marine recruiter, and, you know, it would be my dream and an honor to serve for this country and go to Iraq, but I can't. For health reasons, it's kind of funny, but I blew out my shoulder and I had to get it replaced. So I can't, but if I could,
what did
I would.
You replace it with? Anything bionic?
They're just going to drill a couple screws in it and, you know, replace some cartilage and maybe do a bone graft. It's nothing serious.
Well,
but it's just like, you know, people, they immediately assume things. You know, they assume that we don't want to serve, or they assume that, you know, we can't support something without participating in it, like the Iraq War.
Okay.
Well, I myself want to go there. I want to fight for our country, and I want to serve. I think that'd be the greatest honor I could ever do in life.
All right, and, Daniel, I need to go to a break for a second. Can you stick around for a few minutes?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, just a minute. You're listening to the PES on KCU 90.7 FM. Listening to the PES on KZU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Did you know that car crashes are the number one cause of teen deaths, and that half of all teens die in car crashes? But you can do something about it. Next time you're in a car with a friend who is driving recklessly, speak up. Say something. Anything. Because there is no spokesman to prevent reckless driving. There's only you. Speak up. This is a public service announcement. Message from the Ad Council. Volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for drivers and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers receive hands-on training. Cars, gas, insurance are provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. Sign up. Come by the Women's Resource Center in Wilson Hall, Room 8, or call 335-6849. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 335-2208 or gm@kzuu.org. And once again, on the telephone, we have a member of the College Republicans who was working on that event up on the Cub Mall. We were Daniel from the College Republicans. Daniel, we are back after having our brief little break there. I appreciate you holding over.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, man. So anyway, you were talking about wanting to go Iraq and having it be a great privilege if you were able to do it, but unfortunately, medically, you're unable to at this point.
That's correct. And, you know, maybe someday I can. You know, it's just really, it's a dream of mine, and, you know, I would love to put my life on hold to go to Iraq and or Afghanistan. But I would love to go to Iraq and, you know, fight for this country. And, you know, freedom's not free. You know, you have to fight for it. And, you know, the front on terrorism is over in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know. And, you know, I've talked to several soldiers. It's not, you know, it's not what the public sees on the news.
And,
you know?
And that actually goes with what I was saying about the whole idea of the pessimistic versus the optimistic look of things.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a guy who is a... He's actually a comedian out of Spokane who's gone over to Iraq a couple times doing comedy shows. And he was on the show for about an hour, and he was telling about what it was really like over there and the kinds of things that he saw for himself and the way the people reacted to the soldiers who were there. And it's nothing at all like we see and hear on the news. Nothing at all like it. And you have to question where... What is the news doing? What is the media doing to get all these negative things to show on the radio or show on the TV when you have other people who are over there who aren't that don't have a agenda to really push, that are just citizens who are, you know, they went over there as a comedian to do shows for the troops. And, you know, they're seeing these things out there. And it's like, why are we getting such a huge difference in what is being reported and what people are actually seeing?
You know, it's just like, you know, on April 4th, I believe, the College Republicans will be hosting a documentary called Outside the Wire.
Yes, and I am looking forward to that.
And it's going to be a great look on what the real Iraq is. It's pretty current. It's from 2006. This guy went over there. I've talked to him. You know, I've talked to the makers of the movie. You know, there's no copy and pasting of clips and stuff. You know, everything's flowing. It's what the soldiers are going through. There's interviews and stuff. And it's their story. It's what they have to say. And, you know, people, sometimes they forget, everybody that is over there is a volunteer. We don't have a draft. And, you know, it shows the real story of Iraq. And it's just not, you know, it's the most efficient war ever fought in human history. People just don't understand it.
It's sort of interesting when you say that, too. They're all volunteers who are over there. And it's funny because if you were to almost get the point of view of some of the people, it's like, I don't support the war, but I support the troops.
Yeah,
and it's silly to say that because it's like those people chose to be in the military and they're doing what they were choosing to do. So you're supporting their mentality of realizing that they're going to need to fight at some point in order to make sure that we don't have people coming here to harm us.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, God bless them, really. And people say, well, support the troops. How can you support the troops if you don't support what they're doing? You know, that's a catch-22. You can't do that.
Well,
that's like, back to the firefighter example, that's like, well, I support the firefighters, but I don't support what they're doing.
You know?
I don't support them saving lives and breaking down doors and, you know, saving somebody's entire family and maybe even saving their house, you know. Or, you know, pulling somebody out of a car that just got in a horrible accident from a drunk driver. You know, well, I support firefighters, you know, but
I don't support anything
they do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. And, you know, I think I see where their point of view is coming from, because the thing about the Vietnam War was you had the people hated the troops coming back. They spit on them. They said horrible things about them. And
they set fire in Oregon to a mock soldier.
Yes. That was just the other day. That was, what was it, last week, a week ago.
Right, and that's all over YouTube, liveleak.com.
I mean, you got to seriously ask, what in the heck were you doing? I mean, there's your real support for the soldiers, huh? I mean,
yeah.
It's you know, I guess to me the funniest thing about that whole kind of demonstration is the fact that they're able to do that is the I mean, they're essentially burning the reason why they're able to do that. You know, I hate you soldiers, and to show I hate you, I'm going to burn a effigy of a soldier. But the reason why I have the ability to do that is because of the soldier that I'm now burning.
It's just...
I find that to be the most hypocritical, ironic thing ever. Same thing with burning a flag. You burn a flag because you're trying to say that you don't like what America's doing, but the fact that America allows you to burn a flag is almost like the whole... It's like the idiocy part of it, that I hate America and what it stands for, so I'm going to burn a flag, yet it's because of America and what it stands for that allows you to do such things. You know, so they're using the powers that America invests in them to say that I hate the powers that America has invested in me. And it just cracks me up.
It really does, because they say, you know, they hate this country and everything it stands for, yet everything it stands for allows them to do that.
Yeah.
And have that voice.
If they really hated it that much, there are hundreds of other countries they could choose from. If they really hate it that much.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't be able to do that, because most countries don't have the First Amendment as we do. They don't have the complete and, you know, absolute freedom of speech.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, there, a gentleman of the name of Alex McDonald, he's a pretty prolific member of the WSU student body. He disagreed with me filming with him, and he said basically in words that, you know, I'm misinterpreting the First Amendment and that I don't have a right to film him. And, you know, it was a public place with freedom of movement. It was applicable to the WAC code that associated with photography in public. And he has repeatedly called the Pullman police racist, specifically concerning the taser incident that everybody is so familiar with. But he depended on those, the Pullman police, and he repeatedly asked them, what if I was in the wrong, and, you know, how can you use the services if you disagree with what they do?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I think these people are racist and they're bad people, but the minute I need their help, I'm going to run to them. And you see that so often with so many people. They don't want the police officers to do X, Y, and Z, but the minute they need help, the first person they call are the police that they're saying they don't want the police to be able to do anything. And it just sort of cracks me up. It's, you know, and I guess it's just sort of the way people are. I mean, even with your parents, I'm sure there's times when you don't want them around, you don't want them, you know, listening to what you're doing or talking to you or anything.
Right.
But the minute things go bad, you know, the first person you go running to is your parents.
Right.
Because you realize... In reality, no matter how bad you treat them, they're always your parents, and they're always going to be there for you because they're your kid. And, you know, really with the police, it's the same way. No matter how badly you treat the police, no matter how many times you kick mud in their face, no matter how many times you stab them in the back, the minute you call for them, they're still going to come running to help you. And I think that's one thing to be said about the police that is so amazing. The same people that have done some horrible things to the police and said horrible things about the police, when they've been victims, the police have been there for them. And it's quickly forgotten. It really is. And, you know, I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Pullman is lucky to have the great cops that we have. People think that we don't have good cops. But really, I know a lot of them. They've always been, they're professional when they deal with people. They are police officers. They are authority, so they have to express this authority. They're not everybody's best friend. They have to uphold the law. And unfortunately, just like a lot of times, the messenger is the one who gets the bad end of the stick when somebody doesn't like what the message is.
Yeah.
So the laws, the RCWs, the 9As, are the things that the police have to uphold, and it's by law. These are things that are against the law. If I see it, I need to do something about it. And people don't like that, and they get mad at the police. And it's like, well, first off, there's two things. It's not the police writing those bills. It's the legislature and the governor who are writing and signing off on these bills. It's not the police. And secondly, chances are, if you are doing something where the cop is there, you've done something wrong. So you need to look in the mirror at the fact that you're the one who caused the cop to be there. Don't blame the cop because you're doing something wrong. It's not his fault. It's your fault. He's just doing what he has to do.
Mm-hmm. And that goes, you know, and that's, you know, you hit that right on the button, because that goes back to the Iraq thing. You know, Bush didn't just go in like a tyrant. You know, he went through the UN along with over 40 other nations. And this was in accordance with Resolution 1441 that, you know, you can mention it at a demonstration that has to do with Iraq, and they're just like, oh, what do those numbers mean? Well, you know, it had to do with Saddam's weapons of mass destruction and his weapons programs, and he had to surrender those and provide all the details, and it also said that he had to cooperate. Well, he wasn't cooperating with UN inspectors, and that gave us a right to invade their country and to, you know, facilitate our goal in accordance with the UN and Resolution 1441 and over 40 other nations that took part.
And what most people will tell you about those other nations that took part is that they were browbeaten by Bush in order to support it, and that really they did token support, you know, throwing one or two troops their way or whatever else, and they weren't really supporting it. It was all the U.S., and it was all Bushy trying to get at Saddam for the fact of the first war with his dad, finishing off what his dad didn't finish, and, you know, just all the things that people like to throw that way, you know, calling George W. Bush Bushy or Shrub or whatever else.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing was, finishing what his dad did, I mean, his dad's goal was not to take out Saddam Hussein.
No, he said that from
Kuwait.
Exactly. He said that from the get-go. We are going to stop at the border. We're going to get them out of Kuwait and walk away. And that was the thing. It wasn't, you know, so anyway, it's interesting, this whole debate that the people seem to throw at your way, which isn't really a debate. It's more of a name-calling marathon where these open-minded people are not very open-minded when it comes to you guys.
Yeah, and it's just like, do they even know what the term racist means? I mean, to throw that around so loosely, I mean,
realistically, it actually hurts them in the long run, because the more they do it, the more people stop listening to it, and the less it means.
Right, and realistically, you know, we actually have members that are, you know, I guess you would say not Caucasian or Anglo-Saxon. We have an African-American member, and we also have a Hispanic member. Are they racist? They're saying we're racist against Hispanics and Latinos and Latinas, but yet we have, you know, a Hispanic American, and we also have an African American in our club. So they're saying we're, you know, we're being tyrants and we're being racist to all these cultures and ethnicities, but yet we have members that are not white in our club, not Caucasian or Anglo-Saxon, and they're standing right next to us on the same issues and trying to inform people of these conservative ideas and ideals. I mean, to call somebody of the same ethnicity you are racist, what does that mean? That's like, you know, that's...
Actually, when I worked...
That's
some,
asinine.
Well, some years ago, this is interesting, some years ago I was working as a delivery driver for a company over in the Bellevue or the Renton area, and I had to go to all sorts of other businesses, pick up tile and carpet and everything. And one of the places that I went to, there was this black guy that worked there, and at the time both of us wanted to become cops, and it was interesting. We'd sit there and talk about it, and actually he was at the time he was the brother of one of the stars of the Husky football team. He was the older brother. And, you know, so we'd sit there, we'd talk a little bit about football, but we'd also talk about being a police officer and stuff. And the idea of race came up a little bit. And he said, it's really interesting. When you become a police officer, other black people don't view you as black anymore. It's almost like you lose your race. And I don't know if all police officers find that to be the case, but he was saying that that's the way it was with some of the people. If you became a police officer, you no longer were really a black person. It was almost like being a self-hater or something like that. And, you know, I mean, we could probably spend a day talking about the whole connotation behind that, saying that if you are an authority figure, if you're a police officer, then all of a sudden you're not the race that you originally were, and that you're some other race now, and that where does that kind of mentality come from? That all of a sudden you're not a black person anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's like
that also goes to the whole idea that some people just see race and they can't get past it, and some people they see a person. And it seems to me that the college Republicans are probably closer to seeing the person than the race, because they're not the ones who are bringing up race about everything. It's a lot of the people in the CES department. The minute something happens, they have to throw race into the mix and make it an issue of race, when it's like, it's not an issue of race. But
and
you've made it an issue.
The thing is, like, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, but they have made it an issue of, or they try to make it an issue of race.
And why is it, like, how is it racist when, you know, just for some personal information, and, you know, as I told you, you know, my dream in life would be to go and fight in Iraq. It's my dream, and I feel, I'm just heartbroken that I can't go because of my shoulder. But, you know, personally, you know, they label me as a racist, yet, you know, I've had, you know, in my dating extravaganzas, you know, I've dated, you know, an Asian American, you know, I've dated an African American, and I've also dated, you know, a Hispanic American. So how can a quote unquote racist date somebody that's not white? If you're a white racist, you know, a Caucasian, and somebody labels you as a racist, how could you date somebody else that's not of your same ethnicity?
Well, because other people see race and everything, and some people see the person, and obviously you're one of those people that see people, not races.
Yeah, I don't see colors, and colors.
But, you know, and it's funny because people argue all day long that that's a bad argument, that you claim you don't see colors because nobody can see past the color. That's the first thing you see, and even if you try to say that you don't, that there's things pre-programmed in you that will have these beliefs, and that you can't get around them, and on and on and on. And it's like, well, maybe for you, but just because you do doesn't mean that everybody else in the world does.
Right, and it's just like, I don't know, it's just really crazy because, you know, the college Republicans, we don't see the color of somebody's skin. We're just promoting conservative ideas. We're not promoting race. You know, it's just like, you know, we're not trying to assassinate anybody's culture or anything like that. You know, we're just promoting, you know, conservative ideas and what we think would help this country. And, you know, a national language for, you know, English as a national language would really help our country. I mean, how would you expect to function in society if you, to the full extent that, you know, an American does, if you don't know how to speak English? How would you get into college, you know? How much harder would it be to get a driver's license? You know, how much harder would it be to, you know, appear in the court of law?
Yeah, I just see it as streamlining the government and cutting out unnecessary steps that the government has to take in order to try to make sure that non-English-speaking people are able to get access to all sorts of documentation. And this would be a way of us saying, look, you know, there's businesses are probably still going to be more than willing to speak multiple languages and support you. And there will be people in America that know multiple languages and communicate with you. But you need to know, if you choose to immigrate to America, that America speaks as in terms of communicating with the government in English. And if you want to communicate with them, well, first off, it's necessary for you to communicate with them, and it's going to be necessary for you to communicate with them in English, not
right,
other languages. So by all means, if you want to speak whatever language is your primary language when you come here to your family, to your friends, and whoever else, fine. And if you go to businesses that speak your language, fine. But when it comes to the government, we're going to say America, English, are goes hand in hand, and this is going to be our language, and we're not going to we're not going to spend the time, the money, the effort, the bureaucracy of having multiple languages and multiple documents in multiple languages and all these other issues that come along with it. So anyway.
Right, and that's exactly what we're saying. It's just like, you know, you should be able to, you know, just take this for an example. I was at a restaurant last night, and I had some, just on an acute example, I was at a restaurant, and I had a question about some food, and I was choosing between two meals, and I was just asking questions, and the lady couldn't answer my questions because she couldn't speak English. And, you know, take that for example. If that was, you know, in the government, in the court of law, what then, you know?
Well, then the government pays for translators to your language. And, you know, and that goes, and that's just, you know, it's another issue. It's
right.
We need to get to a baseline of this is the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people will argue that, well, even if somebody can speak English, they might only be able to speak to a certain level. And especially when you get into highly legal things, you might be going well beyond the level of the person's comprehension. You know, and at some points, I understand. It's like, okay, they've gone out of their way. They've tried to learn another language. They're able to communicate and do most things with us. But once in a while, they're going to need some help. They might need somebody to say, okay, here's these higher level concepts that you haven't been able to learn yet or whatever else. You know, you need to have that kind of stuff. But as a standard rule to say, somebody who comes here from another country that says, I don't care to learn a lick of English because I should have a right to speak my language when I get there and you need to conform to me, I think that's where the problem exists.
Yeah, it's just like, where do you draw the line? It's unlimited liability. That's what was going on in our demonstration. I mean, just take my police officer, you know, example, for instance. You know, would you expect a police officer to learn every language in the world that is applicable to, you know, our country, of people coming into our country, every language that they speak? I mean, how would, you know, say that person that I was asking questions on my meal, what is the difference between these two things? What if it was a felony stop, you know, guns drawn, and she could not communicate with the officers? You know, that's an extreme example, and that puts, you know.
But the thing, though, is it's not all that extreme, because realistically, if it is some sort of felony stop or if it's some sort of situation and you're pulling the person over and they're not listening to what you're saying, you're, as the officer, you're yelling, you know, roll down your window, turn off your car, drop your keys out the door, whatever, and you're not doing it, what's the officer going to do? Oh, this person is not listening to what we're saying. You know, what kind of level of force are we going to have to use against them? Are they going for a gun right now? I told them to put their hands on the steering wheel, but instead they're reaching over the glove box. Well, in reality, they know they need to get a license, registration, proof of insurance. They're grabbing that, and they don't know any better because they can't understand what you're saying. But the cop is saying, oh, geez, this person's going for a gun because they're not listening to me.
Yeah, and exactly. And that not only applies to, you know, our law enforcement, but, you know, that applies to all the government institutions. Say public schools, for example. How would you function? How would you receive and absorb direction and education? I mean, it just baffles me. It's just like, it has nothing to do with race.
Sure.
It has to do with the functioning of our government in a smooth fashion, you know, just streamlining everything.
Sure.
And it's just like, we're racist because we want our government to run smoothly.
Exactly.
We're not saying you can't, you know, we're not saying you can't speak another language or, you know, keep your culture. We're just saying, you know, you should learn English to, you know, expect to learn English and speak it when you communicate with, you know, government institutions.
All right. Well, Daniel, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
Maybe we'll get a chance to chat some more when you got some more shenanigans going on up on the mall, huh?
Yeah, we have. I'm actually running for president of the College Republicans. I'm just the event coordinator / you know, political action chairman. So I help plan these events and put them on. But, you know,
I have quite the agenda, and I can't wait to share it with campus, and I'm not afraid to do it. So.
Good. All right, Daniel, thank you again.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a good one. The favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. And in the final portion of the show, I got something that I saw in the Evergreen today, and I just, when I read it, I could not believe that this was written by, well, it appears that it's a staff editorial, no one person signed it, and I could see why no one person signed it, because it was not really well thought out, and the reasoning they used was at best a Sunday night, 8 o'clock at night, deadline's at 11, and we need to get something written really quick, so let's just throw stuff together and you know, hope that we can fit it in the newspaper. And it was, the College Hill suggestion would push students away. The Pullman City Council should work to keep students on College Hill. Few universities can boast an atmosphere like the one on College Hill provides. It is directly connected to the student population. Students enjoy the atmosphere of living in a location that allows them to easily interact with each other. But recent concerns, and they're not recent, by the way, of overcrowding and parking problems prompted the city council to have the area studied. And if the council follows the advice of the study, the exact people for whom the hill is named, and it is called College Hill, not Student Hill, would be the ones punished for the new regulations. More restrictions suggested by the study include a permit plan that only authorizes 2 cars per residence, and more severe penalties for alcohol infractions and encouraging students to live on campus are not the answer. No. You're right. That is not the answer. The best answer is to keep the status quo, to continue to clog the small neighborhoods with cars, and to continue break the laws without consequences. Yeah, that's a better idea. The 4-year cycling of student population leaves an easy out for city planners. The solution assumes that future students will adjust to not being able to park near their homes. And currently it's okay that people who own the homes cannot currently park near their house because the neighborhoods that were meant for single families have been turned into multiple family dwellings or multiple people dwellings, which have 3 to 4 cars, when really when that neighborhood was built, 2 cars, 1 car would have been sort of the standard. So, but it does not for the current residents. Relying on the, oh, well, I've got only another year left mentality is not smart planning for the city. And I believe here in a second we are going to be saved by the wonderful people of the Caped Crusaderness. Hello, caller.
How are you, Scotty?
I am doing well. How is the Cape Crusader doing today?
Oh, he's doing just fine. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing good. I don't know if you heard my issues earlier with the telephone system, but I got everything all ironed out with the help of Daniel from the College Republicans.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and it was interesting because I don't know, you know, in the past I've had some issues with, you know, sometimes you'd hear me, sometimes you wouldn't hear me and everything. And
right, like this is the first time in a very long time that I've actually heard you through the telephone, because prior to this I would always have to listen to the radio and talk to you because I couldn't hear you over the phone.
Ah, but I figured something out today. You know, I mean, well, first off, the first problem we had is the PGM button, and it wasn't pressed, and I'm like, okay, so cool. So I'm playing with stuff, and he still can't hear me, and I'm looking over at my slider with the microphone, and I'm like, okay, the PGM's on. Then there's the audition, and there's the TEL. TEL, And I figured maybe if I were to turn that TEL button on, he would hear me. And so I experimented. I turned it on. He was able to hear me. Then I said a specific word, and after I turned it off, then I turned it back on. I said, what word did I just say? And he didn't know. So now I know I have to have the PGM, the TEL button, and the PGM button, and the sliders pushed up, and the one button put on hold, and this other button pressed over here on a different system, and then you're on the air.
Yeah.
Just like that. Clockwork.
Yeah.
No problem.
Hey, I could totally relate. You know, for all you listeners at home, it's not as easy as Scotty just made it sound, because there were several times spring semester of last year where we had some issues like that. I think there was one time if you remember when it was Tracy Otting was calling in, you know, about the one strike law.
Yes.
And you and her both were on the phone that day, and I believe I screwed that up. So, like, the whole first 5 minutes of, like, what she said wasn't even brought. It was like all I think anyone on the air could hear was me talking. I don't think they heard you or her.
Oh, wow.
But I eventually got that figured out. So, yeah, it's... It can be technically challenging at times, definitely, especially when you throw the phone system into the mix. So
yeah. So anyway, it's good to hear your voice this week. Yes. I had the issues last week when I tried to get one of the callers on the air, and I think now that I've learned this part of the phone system, I don't think I'll have the problems anymore.
Good.
I think I've ironed them all out now. It's only taken 4 years.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, no time like the present. But it was like, I don't know. I guess it just seemed like in the past that everything was already set up and it was always right. But obviously people press different buttons to turn things on and off. So one week it's the board's one way. Then in the other week it's another way. And,
right.
But now that I know exactly what I'm looking for in the future, I can make sure that all the buttons necessary that need to be on for the system to work will be on. So. Hopefully we won't have these technical difficulties anymore. It'll be fun.
Yes.
I'm going to be having, actually, just a side note, next week I'm going to be having some guests from BigButtRadio.com.
Okay.
It's sort of a funny name for the website, Big Butt Radio, but the idea is it's a personal trainer with a guy who used to have a radio show in the Seattle area and this other lady, and they get together and they actually have a internet-based radio show
mm-hmm.
where they talk about, you know, ways of getting rid of your big butt.
Right.
And it, more or less the background on it is a guy named Andy Savage who used to have a radio station. He used to have a show. It was Andy Savage in the Morning, and it was on one of the radio stations back in Seattle. And when I was living out there, I'd listen to it every day.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun. It was a good show. It was a good morning show. And all of a sudden, one day, I turn on the radio, and it was this weird radio station. It was called Jack FM, and I'm sure you've heard of Jack and Bob and all these other one-named radio stations that, you know, they always say we play what we want, and
right,
they'll go from like Paul Abdul over to the Rolling Stones over to Pink Floyd, and it's just, you know, and then down to the Clash or the Cure or whatever else. Some, you know, and it's, so it's not right any one genre. You're going all over the place, and it's like it's a really annoying format to me. I cannot stand it because there's some music that I have no desire to listen to one bit. And I think it also hurt them that they took out my favorite Seattle area radio station when they switched formats.
Yes.
And when they switched formats, they got rid of the morning crew.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like an abrupt thing. It was like one day they're there, the next day they were gone. There was no warning. There was nothing. It was boom.
That seems to happen frequently.
And it was really annoying. So anyway, I lost Andy Savage in the morning and, you know, he actually, it was a really bad time for him. He had actually, because, I mean, it was one of those things where it was like, you know, they say things come in threes. Well, that was the case for him. Things came in threes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, life was really bad for him for a while. And as it was, he wasn't a very healthy person. And he met this personal trainer. And this personal trainer worked with him day after day after day.
Yeah.
You know, and more or less, Andy said, I don't like exercising. I don't like certain foods, but I need to do something.
Right.
And this personal trainer worked with him, and they did things, and they made small steps, and they, you know, did things that, you know, Andy was able to work on. And I was on the website BigButtRadio.com, and it was amazing. The picture of Andy was, I guess Tom, you're a great example. It was like that. Seriously, it was like that. There was a huge transformation.
Yeah.
And I saw the same thing in Andy Savage. I was like, wow, that was incredible. I mean, the guy went from being very, very stocky to, I mean, he's not a six-pack type of guy, but
sure.
He looks a lot more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure it's still a work in progress. It's only been a year.
Sure. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was an amazing transformation. And so Big Butt Radio, they're about, talking about how, you know, to be healthier and you know, they have the personal trainer, and you can call in and you can actually write in, the personal trainer gets back to you and everything. And anyway, I'm going to have them on the show next week.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. And of course, you know, I'd be very interested in that, because, you know, like you said, having kind of done that myself over the last year, I'd just kind of be curious to, you know, hear what he recommends. Because I just kind of came up with my own little, you know, program, and it seemed to work really well. But I'm always interested to hear of ideas and suggestions and things like that. So that'll be interesting. Definitely tune in for that.
And if I'm correct, for you, a lot of your exercise routine is walking.
Yeah, it is. Yes. And
so it's not even overly strenuous on you. It's just getting out there and putting in the time.
It's kind of interesting, you know, about the whole, you know, the whole walking thing. Well, because of course, you know, we ran into each other the other day.
Yeah.
Scotty is always. Very, I'm proud to say he is out there serving Pullman as a firefighter, and ran into Scotty in that capacity the other day when I was out walking. He was the Pullman Fire Training Center is next to the building that I work in, so I kind of came across Scotty while he was out doing some training, and we spoke for a few minutes. But I try to walk about 3 miles every day. But it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because today I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, and I guess Rush is like in a big weight losing mode. He was talking about how that he had lost 35 pounds in like the last 42 days, but he said without exercise, you know, and he said that people have been calling in and like writing angry letters and everything else. How dare you tell people not to exercise? Because he thinks exercise is irrelevant when it comes to losing weight. You know, and his example, you know, kind of was true, because what he said was, he said, okay, yeah, you people yell at me, but you go out and you walk a mile and it burns 100 calories. And that's true. You know, it's a lot of it is based on how much you weigh, but roughly walking a mile at a brisk pace, you're going to burn at most 100 to 150 calories for each, you know, mile. So,
sure.
So when you think about burning off, you know, 35 pounds, that's, you know, and you can, every pound of fat requires 3,500 calories to burn it off. That's a lot of miles to burn off 35. You know, you're never going to walk off all that fat, you know, but I'm of the opinion that, you know, there's a lot of other things that go into it besides just the burning of the calories.
Sure.
One of the things that I've discovered is
your cardiovascular system.
Well, regardless of the whole, I mean, and Rush wasn't saying that exercise wasn't valuable. He just said as a tool to lose weight, it was largely irrelevant, which, again, like I said, when you look at strictly the numbers, you can make that case. But I think the walking, of course, is important for you know, cardiovascular health. But also, I think especially with men, you know, you can read and see where muscle tissue burns fat or burns calories a lot more than fat tissue does. And so if you are a muscular person, you know, if you have muscles more than you have fat, your body will naturally tend to burn more calories just by doing nothing. You know, just by existing,
sure,
you will burn more calories. And so that's why I think in general, if you exercise and tend to build up, you know, muscle mass, you in general, it's going to help you in your dieting, because in general your body's just going to be using more, you know, fat. So, I walk. I'm pretty, you know, religious about it. But, you know, it has to be other things too, of course. I mean, it has to be diet and everything. It's not just the walking. I mean, if I were to walk and then return to my, you know, if I were just to continue walking and return to my former eating habits, I would probably still continue to gain weight, because, you know, you have to monitor what you eat too. So, but that was kind of interesting to hear him talk about that this morning. It's like, well, yeah, I guess he's right about that.
So I'm curious, what kind of things have you cut out and or added to your diet recently?
The big cut out was pop.
You got rid of... Now, did you drink, like, Diet Pepsi, or did you drink, like, regular Pepsi?
No, I used to drink regular pop. And I probably had 4 or 5 cans a day.
And you're a computer guy, and
yes,
you're a programmer. I mean, that's expected of you.
I know.
As a computer programmer, that you drink something with a lot of caffeine, like Mountain Dew or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what your pop of choice was.
I used to be a Dr. Pepper man.
There you go. Dr. Pepper's another one, yeah?
Nice sugary pop. And you know, and the problem was, you know,
it's a lot of sugar.
Numbers game, and so you look at the calories, it's like 150 calories per can. That's just if you have a can. Like, God forbid you go get one of the big 20 ounces from, you know, the store, then you're really, you know, one of the big 20 ounce bottles, you're really, you know, packing it on. But, you know, let's say, okay, 4 cans a day at 150 cans of pop, that's an extra 600 calories a day of empty calories into your diet.
Right. So even if you did your 2 miles of walking.
Yeah, I've completely
burned off two of the four cans.
And that's I'd still be gaining weight.
Yeah.
Pop is very bad.
And 600 calories a day, that's huge. I mean, that's a meal, pretty much.
After a while, yeah, I mean, you start, you know, you can see how, you know, they say the average person gains maybe like a pound a year, but if you're drinking that much pop, you're probably gaining realistically 3, 4, 5 pounds every year.
Right.
That goes by. And that's what had happened with me. It wasn't like all at once. It was just, you know, the gradual process of over the years, you know, they kind of sneak up on you and you're like, oh, okay, this is kind of bad. And so, you know, with me, it wasn't so much, I wasn't really so much concerned about the vanity aspect. I was more, the health. I mean, yeah. I'm, you know, coming up on 44 years old, and, you know, eventually it's like you start thinking about, yeah, you know, it's a lot of bad things that can start happening to you once you get up in your mid-40s, you know, and it's like, I don't want to, you know, have any open-heart surgeries or, you know, type 2 diabetes or anything like that. And, I mean, that's the other bad thing about pop, not just the calories, but, of course, the sugar and can put you at really high risk for, you know, for diabetes and things like that. So, yeah, it was hard. That was probably the hardest thing I had to do because I was.
I would say that would be
definitely addicted. I just had to go cold turkey. That was the only.
I did that for a while. I totally got rid of pop from my diet. I had, I'm one of those guys. I don't drink coffee in the morning, so the first thing I do is open a can of pop.
Yeah, see, I used to do that.
And too. I have a 44-ouncer that I get usually refilled twice a day on average.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, typically on most days I'm drinking anywhere from 80 to 100 plus ounces of pop every day.
Right.
And I actually quit cold turkey. And I'll tell you what, I had a raging headache the next day.
Yeah.
Because that caffeine was just...
from the caffeine is a killer.
But then I drank tons and tons and tons and tons of water. I mean, I had, you know, this big... one of my old plastic pop cups turned into a water cup. And it was one of super big gulp 64-ouncers. And I'd fill that with water. And, I mean, if you drink that every day, that's your 8 glasses of 8 ounces of water every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I drank a lot more water. And I still drink a lot of water. But... one day when I had to drive somewhere, I was a little bit groggy. I was like, well, okay, just a little pop. So then I went with like a 20-ouncer, and I did 20 ounces every once in a while as a treat. And then pretty soon I graduated to the 32 ounces. Now I'm back up to the 44 ounces. But the one thing I can say is when it comes to pop, I'm really, really choosy on the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that I actually, of all the pops that are out there that you can buy real easily, Diet Pepsi is by far the best tasting pop I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not necessarily getting in calories and sugars from it, but you'd have to wonder. There has to be other things in there that aren't probably all that good for you. But at least I know I'm not getting the sugar and
right.
the calories from
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, you're still getting the caffeine, but yeah, not the sugar. Well, yeah, and that was with me because, you know, I was so picky about the taste that, you know, I was like, I could never drink Diet Pop. I was so hooked on the sugar pops that I mean I could have been like a Diet Pop detector for the government. Like when these drug sniffing dogs. I mean in the blind taste test would be like one sip, it's like, oh yeah, that's diet. You know,
wow.
I could not stand it. And so you know, when I went cold turkey, I really had no alternative, you know, but to switch over to water, pretty
yeah.
much, because no diet drinks appealed to me at all. There was kind of a light lemonade that kind of pulled me out. There's like this Minute Maid makes like a light lemonade that's just 5 calories, and it's relatively, you know, it's not like real lemonade, but it's tasteful enough. And then the thing about it is, after about a month or so of going cold turkey and just having water to drink all the time, and some Fresca, too. Fresca wasn't that bad either. And then suddenly I found that I could tolerate diet drinks. And now I can drink diet anything. You know, you name it, Diet Coke. Or I agree with you. I think Diet Pepsi probably is the most tasteful of the diet colas. You know, Diet Dr. Pepper. I'll drink it all now, and it's great. You know, because
yeah.
Now that I've purged myself from the sugar, it's like it doesn't. You know, the Splenda. You know, that's what a lot of the Splenda taste now is not
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Or aspartame or whatever is not that bad anymore.
Right. Actually, it was funny when I was in high school. For whatever reason, I think it was my brother drank Diet Coke, and I wasn't a big pop drinker until about my junior and senior year. And after that point, then I started drinking pop. But before that, I never drank pop. It was always milk or water.
Right.
And I started drinking a little bit of pop. And it was mainly when I was with my brother, and he always drank Diet Coke. So I drank Diet Coke, and I got really used to the flavor of Diet Coke, and that's what I liked. And then my parents always had Diet Pepsi around the house. And it was one of those things. Do I buy my own pop or do I drink theirs? So you can guess what I did.
Right.
And then I acquired the taste for Diet Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and again, I would get Diet Coke. And it tasted like somebody took my Diet Pepsi and squeezed a lemon. And it was really a bitter, horrible flavor. So if I go somewhere now and I need to buy pop and they don't have Diet Pepsi, I'll either get regular Coke, which I know isn't as good
right.
for me because it's of all the sugar and everything, but I do not like the flavor of Diet Coke at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand it.
Right.
And I'll go with regular Coke or root beer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my sort of backups. So it's either Diet Pepsi, regular Coke, or root beer.
Sure.
Or orange, I guess. You know. But so I'm really picky about pops. I don't like Dr. Pepper at all. That's my brother's favorite. He loves Diet Dr. Pepper. Now that's all he ever drinks.
Well, one interesting thing about Mexico, or what that's nice for me, one aspect of Mexico is, of course, they have different soft drink bottling, places down there, and also I believe different formulas. And I had noticed this on previous trips to Mexico back when I was drinking regular pop, that the Coke in Mexico tasted. Like the old Coke used to taste, including coming in a glass bottle.
Oh.
They still do them in glass bottles.
And I'll tell you.
And it really tasted like the old Coke. So now I've switched over to, they don't have a Diet Coke in Mexico. It's called Coca-Cola Light, or you just order it in the restaurant as Coca Light. And it's what you just say, it's Coca Light, and they know what it is. You don't say Diet Coke. And it tastes really good. I mean, I had to look very carefully at the bottle, like, okay, is this really zero calories? Because... It tasted like, it did not taste like a diet drink. It was very nice. I mean, whatever the artificial sweetener that they use in Mexico is much, much sweeter than any of the ones, and again, maybe you shudder to think about, what's in it. Like, it's somehow, the FDA of Mexico maybe is not quite as rigorous as the FDA in the United States. It's like, well, is this going to be bad for me? But it does taste really good, though. So the diet drinks in Mexico are very nice. And like I said, I'm sure it may be something more along the lines of Splenda. That's like, what is it they call sucrose or something? It's like the artificial sugar that they've,
sure.
that they've come up with. But it's really good. It's a whole different flavor than like Diet Coke in the U.S. It's more reminiscent of Diet Pepsi, I would say, than Diet Coke, as the Diet Coke they have there. So,
but that's interesting.
Yeah, and in a glass bottle, which I love.
Oh, man. There's nothing like pop out of a glass bottle.
Nope.
I mean, pretty much any beverage that you buy, if you know what I mean, is so much better out of a glass bottle.
Sure.
I mean, plastic, I cannot... I actually don't buy the 22-ouncers or the 20-ouncers bottles because I really don't like those. They just don't have a very good flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the fountain pop more than anything.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
I mean, by far, that is the best flavor. And, it's unfortunate that they don't do the glass bottles anymore. But
I know, and you wonder why. Because really, glass is probably a lot more biodegradable than plastic is. I mean, there's some of these plastic bottles that have been thrown into... dumps and every place else, they probably won't degrade for 10,000
right.
years.
And I think probably, I would, if I had a guess, it's probably cheaper to make the plastic bottles.
Yeah, but
and,
I mean, the government forced them to do it. I think maybe it was a safety issue.
And I was going
to
say, exactly, safety with the glass. You don't drop the bottle and it breaks on you, I mean, there's
right.
even, ketchup and everything else that used to be traditionally glass.
Right,
everything's
virtually
going to
nothing's
plastic.
In, glass bottle anymore. But again, it's because, there is... my wife always thinks I'm silly, but,
there's a difference.
The glass makes a difference.
100%.
And even worse than the bottle is the can, because I mentioned, Diet Dr. Pepper. It's like, I'm pretty finicky about the Diet Dr. Pepper. Like, if it comes out of the can, I don't really like it as much as what comes out of the plastic bottle.
Yeah.
So, there's not many, sometimes they're sold out. You can always get, the 12-pack of cans, but it's hard to find, the 24-ounce, plastic
bottles.
So
sure.
If you ever see the Diet Dr. Pepper in the bottles is sold out in Pullman, it's probably because of
you.
Of me. it's like maybe at any given time there may be like a couple of six packs at Dismore's and a couple at Safeway, and that's it,
Yeah.
So
too bad you didn't have more options to shop.
Ah, yes, I know.
So did you have some earth shattering news for us today?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear about the I heard a little bit of Danny was on earlier on
sure.
on the show, and that was good to hear. And so it's you know, it's typical, the reaction. You know, it's really, it's not even so much a question of whether you believe that there should be an official language or not. I think, you know, the issue for me is the climate of debate that we have here in Pullman and at WSU. And, you know, and I just posted about this a little while ago on Pelusatix.com that, I call it's known as the argumentum ad nauseam. It's like, you know, it's, or playing the Hitler card is another way to say it. And it's like anyone that you disagree with, particularly if they're a Republican, it seems to be this is a tactic of the left more often, is immediately if there's someone that you disagree with, rather than argue them or debate them with valid points, you immediately compare them to the Nazis. And then that was in the Evergreen today.
I was going to say there was a letter like that in the Evergreen.
Yes, right. Ooh, it reminds me of the, you know, Ein Führer, Ein Volk, Ein Reich thing and, like, fascism and everything else. It's like, why? No, it doesn't. Why does everything to the left immediately have to revolve back to Hitler? It's like you know, they play the Hitler card all the time. And then, you know, it immediately puts people on defensive. You know, if you start getting compared to Nazis and Hitler, and all of a sudden, like, usually debate stops, you know, when you do that. And John Stream has tried to do the same thing back in November with the border fence. You know, he wrote a letter to the Evergreen that said that the border fence is the same thing as taking a swastika and driving through a Jewish neighborhood. You know, it's like, no, it's not. But yet he can say that, and it immediately, you know, changes the complexion of the debate. And then there's... This happens online frequently, too. There's even a law that's been developed to it's called Godwin's Law. It's basically that the longer an online discussion continues, the more likely it is that Nazism will be invoked. And like there's a factor, like it's by a factor of whatever, you know, the longer an online debate continues, the factor increases the factor of one that the Hitler will come into it at some point. And it does, almost inevitably. You know, whenever you get like a, you know, on a discussion board and there's like heated argument going back and forth, it usually doesn't take long until Hitler comes out. Even happened in the Moscow Pullman Daily News last week. You know, we've got the new capability for subscribers.
Oh yes,
to you know,
discussions.
To post on the forum. And,
yeah, one of the first things said
the very
about
first
that guy
said,
was
like,
about
does
Hitler.
This guy look like Hitler?
Yeah,
it's like okay. And what did you think about his point? Okay,
exactly.
He looks like okay. You think he looks like Hitler? Now, what do you think about what he just had to say about the Moscow school levy? I mean,
yeah.
That's what's very unfortunate. It's not so much what the Republicans are saying, but I think what they do is point out over and over again how the left in this town and the left on campus is completely intellectually bankrupt when it comes to the marketplace of ideas. They don't have any ideas to bring forward. They have nothing to argue intelligently, so all they can do is sling mud and preferably call someone a Nazi. Or I heard you say, you know, racist or homophobe. You know, fill in the sweeping generalization of your choice and apply that to the people that you disagree with.
Yep. So there was one thing I did see in the paper, in the Daily News that was really good, was the BizBits by Murph Rackett. And I was reading that, and you know, I saw that before it was posted on Pelusatix, and I knew you'd pick up on it, so I didn't even bother. But essentially, they're talking to the new owners of the Ace Hardware that's in the old Safeway building.
Yeah.
And he said, Doug is confident if Walmart is located near a store, which is the plan, he and others will benefit.
Yes.
And Doug is the owner of Ace Hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart provides some competition, but generally speaking, it will bring in enough traffic to help us, he said. Ace advised us to not be afraid. They said, if you can locate near one, do so.
Mm-hmm.
So Ace Hardware told them to locate near Walmart.
Sure.
You know, how do you argue against that
as
a business killer?
You can't. And see, Pard won't. See, all of these things that come out like this in the newspaper, stories like this, Pard won't argue it. You know, they will come back. They'll come back with some other red herring like sweatshops, or they'll come back with some other red herring about traffic or the cemetery. They won't argue the real issues. There's been ample evidence in the pages of the Daily News over the last 2 years. For example, Dwayne Brelsford has been quoted in the newspaper on two occasions that I can think of as saying that he specifically is building retail down near Bishop because of Walmart. Specifically,
right.
He's not just saying because of Pullman is growing. No, he said specifically because Walmart is going to bring in shoppers and traffic. Just like Crimson Village, the developers of Crimson Village said that they're building there because Walmart attracts shoppers. And PARD will not address those issues. That's why I'm saying it is impossible to have an intelligent debate on any issue in this town with the left wing or liberals because they refuse to debate the facts. They would rather, like I said, pick some red herring that has nothing to do. You know, the issue of sweatshops is irrelevant to Pullman. It is irrelevant, okay? We cannot control. The city council of Pullman has no control over multinational corporations and global economics and wages and prices in third world countries. And we have no say-so over that, okay? The only thing that's really relevant to whether Walmart should be in Pullman or not is will it be good for this town or will it be bad for this town? Those
right.
are the issues that we should be debating, things that we actually have control over. And whenever that subject comes up, and, you know, when these facts come out about how it will help business, how the businesses are being attracted to Pullman already before Walmart has even turned one shovel of dirt.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you know, that we'll never see that debated by PARD. They'll never address it. They'll never, and because there is, how do you rebut that? You know, when the owner of a, there is no way to rebut it. What are they going to say? The owner of a business, you know, he makes a decision to locate here based on Walmart being located here. What study is PARD going to proffer? You know, oh, well, that was pretty stupid because this study by whatever.
Essentially, he doesn't know what's best for his own business.
Yeah, it's like, you know, are they going to lecture him on what, you know, and you know what? And if they're right, he'll fail and he'll learn his lesson. You know,
yeah.
It's like that's been the whole contention anyway, is if Walmart is so bad for business, let's find out. You know, if it is, if you guys, you know, let's have a competition in the marketplace. If you don't like Walmart that much, and if everyone else hates Walmart, they'll come. No one will go there. The store will do no business, and it'll be forced to close. You'll
right.
have won.
Exactly.
And of course, they know that's not going to happen. So that's why they can't let it happen, and they're going to fight it, you know, through other methods.
Exactly. Well, Tom, I appreciate your phone call. It was interesting to talk about the whole pop thing, and then
I will definitely tune in next week to hear BigFatRadio.com.
BigButtRadio.com.
Okay.
And it will probably be closer to the noon hour.
Good.
And we'll discuss. You know, I'll hopefully try to get a little info about, you know, the background, and then go into a little bit about what they're doing. And it would be interesting to get his point of view on maybe what Rush Limbaugh had said about.
Exercise being very relevant
in the
to weight
loss.
Yes.
Right. Alrighty. Well, once again, Tom, I appreciate you calling, and I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Once again, this is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM.